Justin, and I'm talking about joint work with Mike Roberts, Michael Mitzenmacher, and Hans-Peter Feister, and we're all from across the river over at Harvard. So we're interested very broadly in applications involving outsourcing computation. So any setting where a individual organization uses or hires another individual organization to store and process its data. So a wide variety of scenarios map into this template, but of course this is hot cloud, and our main motivation will be commercial cloud computing services. So in many of these cloud computing settings, the user requires, or at least would like, some guarantee that the cloud performed the computation correctly. So the user might be concerned about relatively benign things, like the cloud might have dropped some data, or there might be an uncorrected hardware fault, or just the cloud might be executing a buggy algorithm. Or the user might be more paranoid and be concerned that the cloud is deliberately deceptive or has been externally compromised. So if we could allow the cloud to actually give a correctness guarantee, it could help mitigate a lot of these trust issues that might be hindering the adoption of cloud computing solutions. So a very natural solution to this problem is to actually require the cloud to prove correctness of any answer it returns to the user. So I'm going to tell you about some protocols that can achieve this. So let me be very clear about what our goals are. So our first goal is to provide the user with a guarantee of correctness without requiring the user to perform the requested computation herself. Obviously, if the user had to perform the computation herself, it completely defeats the purpose of using the cloud. But we'd actually like something stronger. So ideally, we'd like to ensure that the user doesn't even have to maintain a local copy of the data. The reason being that in many settings, the user resorted to the cloud in the first place because she has more data than she can store herself. So if our protocol requires the user to keep a local copy of the data, that again just defeats the purpose of using the cloud. Our second goal is to minimize the amount of extra bookkeeping the cloud has to do in order to prove integrity of the computation. So ideally, the cloud will not have to do too much more work to prove integrity than it would have to do to just solve the problem without such a guarantee. And finally, we would ideally like our protocols to be secure against arbitrarily malicious clouds, but sufficiently lightweight for use in more benign settings, like I mentioned on the previous slide. So this is a very challenging goal, but if we could achieve it, we would have protocols that are useful in a wide variety of situations, and it could go a long way towards mitigating a lot of these trust issues. So fortunately, possible solutions to this problem have been studied for a few decades now in the theory literature in the form of what are called interactive proofs. So in any interactive proof, there are two parties. There's a prover P and a verifier V. So the prover is like the cloud, and the verifier is like the user. And you should think of P as very powerful and V as very weak. So P solves a problem and tells V the answer, and then P and V actually have a conversation in which P's goal is to convince V that the answer is correct. And any interactive proof has to satisfy two requirements. The first is called completeness, which basically says that if the prover is being honest and follows the prescribed protocol, the prover will convince the verifier that she's telling the truth. And the second is a security property called soundness, which basically says that if the prover lies and returns the wrong answer, the user should catch her with high probability, no matter what the prover says to try to convince her otherwise. So this is a very strong security guarantee. It holds against computationally unbounded clouds who are trying to trick the user. So IPs have actually turned out to be surprisingly powerful, much more powerful than people expected them to be when they were first introduced. And they've really transformed the landscape of complexity theory in the last 25 years. And some of the results that I've listed here, which I won't go into, outline just how powerful interactive proofs are, and they're some of the most celebrated results in theory. But IPs have had very little impact in real delegation scenarios, if any. And sort of the starting point for the work I'm going to tell you about today was to ask why. It doesn't seem to be due to lack of applications, especially as cloud computing becomes more and more popular. It really seems like if we had sufficiently lightweight interactive proof protocols, they would mitigate a lot of trust issues that people really want to solve. So an old answer to this question, why they haven't had much practical impact, would have been that most results in IPs dealt with very hard problems, so problems you couldn't solve in practice even if you wanted to, and they generally needed the prover or the cloud to be too powerful. But this answer doesn't apply to some more recent constructions from the literature. In particular, it doesn't apply to something of a breakthrough construction due to Goldwasser, Kalai, and Rothblum from 2008. So this protocol focuses on quote-unquote easy problems, and you might ask, well, if the problem's easy, what's the point of outsourcing it? You know, the user can just ignore the cloud and solve it herself. The answer is that if you use this protocol, it actually allows the verifier, the user, to run very quickly. Actually, the user will just take about linear time in the size of the input. So outsourcing is useful even though the problem's easy, because the verifier actually runs much faster than she would without access to the prover. And what's more, the prover doesn't need much more time to prove correctness than she does to solve the problem in the first place. So I'll be much more specific in a moment about what much more time means, but the point is that on its face, this protocol seems to achieve most of the goals I outlined at the start of the talk. So does it yield a practical protocol? Well, the answer, unfortunately, is no, at least not out of the box. The main reasons are that the prover does have to do a lot of extra bookkeeping. So in particular, the prover's runtime will be at least cubic in the runtime to just solve the problem without an integrity guarantee. So sort of in theory land, a cubic blow up in runtime is, well, that's not a big blow up. The prover's still polynomial time. Of course, in practice, if you take an n squared computation, make an n to the sixth, you're toast. So that's a major issue. Another is that, at least naively, the verifier with this protocol does have to retain the full input. So if you're a cloud computing user who doesn't have the space to store their full input, you would be toast, at least naively. And there's also substantial overhead due to finite field arithmetic, which can be much slower than normal arithmetic. This protocol works over finite fields, as do most interactive proofs, and other technical issues that I won't get into. So this was sort of the starting point for the line of work I want to tell you about today. So our hot cloud paper is a direct follow-up work on an earlier paper by Kormod Mitzmacher and myself from earlier this year, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about both of these papers. And first, before I do, I want to mention that both of these papers actually fall in even broader line of work with the goal of developing truly practical interactive proof protocols. And we've sort of taken a two-pronged approach in this line of work. Our major goal is to come up with a general purpose implementation that can allow users to verify arbitrary computations. And we have a working implementation based on the GKR construction I've already told you about. We've also taken another line of attack, which is to develop highly optimized protocols for specific problems, things like matrix multiplication and graph problems like perfect matching and linear programs and much more. So if I come up a little bit short today of convincing you that these general purpose methods are fully practical yet, just note that we have much more efficient protocols that are less general but apply to very important problems that can then be used as primitives and more complicated protocols and so forth. Okay, so let me tell you the main results of sort of this earlier ITCS paper and our hot cloud follow-up work. And I'll be very clear when I'm talking specifically about the hot cloud paper. So the first main result is that our implementation can save the verifier substantial amounts of space essentially for free. The reason is that although naively the GKR protocol requires the user to store the full input, a simple modification removes that requirement. The reason is that in the GKR protocol, the verifier only needs to keep a small fingerprint of the data. So this fingerprint can be computed in a single lightweight pass over the input. It doesn't even depend on the problem being outsourced, so that pass over the input can occur well before the verifier even knows what function she's interested in computing. And intuitively, this fingerprint serves as a sort of secret that the verifier keeps to catch the cloud in a lie if the cloud tries to mislead her. So the upshot for the cloud computing setting is that the GKR protocol actually fits the cloud computing setting surprisingly well. So you can imagine that you're a retailer and you're using the cloud to store and process your transactions. And this observation means that if you use the GKR protocol, then as soon as the cloud has a record of a transaction, you can essentially forget that it occurred. All you need to keep is this very small fingerprint, and the fingerprint will only be a few kilobytes in size, even if you're dealing with terabytes or petabytes of data. The fingerprint is only logarithmic in the data size. The second main result is that our implementation can save the verifier substantial amounts of time. So for example, when we're multiplying two 512 by 512 matrices, our implementation of the verifier requires about a little over a tenth of a second. Naive matrix multiplication would take about six times as long, and the savings would be much more on larger input sizes or for more complicated problems. The reason being that, as I said, the verifier just needs to take this fingerprint, so that runtime just grows linearly in the input size, and that's independent of how complicated the problem is that you're outsourcing. The third main result is that we've come a long way in making the prover more efficient. So I told you a few slides ago that naively the prover in the GKR construction has this cubic overhead in its runtime. And in our earlier work, we brought that overhead down from cubic to just logarithmic. So we basically remove, theoretically speaking at least, almost all of the overhead, the extra bookkeeping that the prover has to do to prove correctness as opposed to just return the answer. And there was a lot of engineering work that I'm sort of brushing under the rug here, like we had to work over the right finite field to ensure fast finite field arithmetic and make things work quickly. We had to use the right kind of circuits and so forth. But unfortunately, in practice, this is not really quite good enough on its own. So it's much better than it used to be, much better. But for example, on 256 by 256 matrix multiplication, our implementation of the prover, our single-threaded implementation, takes about 27 minutes. So that's still much slower than practical, but it's astronomically better than anything that sort of existed at least a few years ago. Our fourth main result, and this is the focus of our hot cloud paper, is that our implementation is extremely amenable to parallelization. And this can go a long way to mitigating the issue on the previous slide. So this holds for both the prover and the verifier, although, as I've already mentioned, the verifier runs very quickly even without parallelization. So to make this concrete, here are our experimental results from two problems. The first problem, it's not actually so important what the problem is. It's actually computing the sample variance of a data stream. And you can see our prover implementation, single-threaded, takes about 30 seconds. But if we use our GPU implementation, so GPUs are parallel hardware that were originally designed for graphical applications but have increasingly found applications outside of graphics, we can lower that to just a 3 or 4 tenths of a second. The verifier, single-threaded, takes only 2 tenths of a second, and the other costs of the protocol are reasonable as well. For matrix multiplication, which I've already talked about a little bit, the prover takes 27 minutes single-threaded, but on the GPU, it only takes about 40 seconds. Now, if the verifier also has a GPU, and this is not so unreasonable to expect because GPUs are now on a lot of laptops, so you can imagine you're a cloud computing user and you just have a laptop and you want to check the computation, you might use your GPU, we can get close to 100-fold speedups. The point there being that this fingerprint that the verifier has to take is very, very easy to parallelize. Each item in the input just contributes independently to that fingerprint. And I just want to mention that before closing, that one of the main technical challenges in parallelizing the protocol and scaling to large inputs was the very memory-intensive nature of the prover's computation in the GKR protocol. So to make this concrete, if you're multiplying two n by n matrices, naively that would take n cubed time, but it would only require n squared space, right? You only have to store the two input matrices and the output matrix. But in the GKR protocol, the prover actually has to store a whole circuit computing the function that you're interested in. So for matrix multiplication, that circuit has time, has size n cubed. So this circuit can be very, very large, even for reasonably small matrices. And we had to take steps to mitigate this bottleneck. For example, it was particularly an issue on the GPU because device memory is limited. So it turns out we found ways to only keep one layer of the circuit on the GPU at a time, so that we were very careful in how we use the device memory. So it turns out now I would argue that moving forward, the biggest bottleneck in this protocol is actually the memory usage of the prover rather than its runtime, although the runtime is maybe a couple orders of magnitude off of practical still. But to emphasize, much closer than it used to be even a few years ago to practical. So I just want to mention some related work. So these verifiable computation techniques from the theory community are starting to gain traction in practice. So there was a paper in NDSS earlier this year where they implemented an argument system that was originally due to Ishai Kushalevitz and Ostrovsky. So an argument system is something, it's basically an interactive proof that's only secure against computationally bounded clouds. So not arbitrarily malicious clouds, but clouds that run in polynomial time. And there was a lot of engineering work to make this practical or approach practicality because sort of naively, basically all of the theory solutions take a ton of time. Our implementation has a few advantages over this one. We can save the verifier time even when outsourcing a single computation, and it seems inherent in this argument system that you can only save the verifier time if you amortize setup cost over many, many problems. And again, we're secure against computationally unbounded clouds. There's also been work developing practical protocols in a more relaxed setting where you have access to two clouds, at least one of whom is honest. So the clouds sort of argue with each other, and you figure out which one's telling the truth. And there's some more recent theory work that's working towards practical protocols in a more restricted setting. This is known as PCPs that I won't get into. The main point of the related work slide is that these things are starting to gain traction in practice. So in conclusion, and I'm actually going to take a couple minutes beyond this conclusion slide, but the main points I wanted to convey today are that interactive proofs and other protocols for verifiable computation are some of the most celebrated results in theory that have the power to mitigate a lot of trust issues in cloud computing, but until recently they were wildly impractical. So we have a working implementation that's general purpose that can save the user a lot of time and space already, and the main remaining bottleneck is the efficiency of the prover. And parallelization can go a long way to help mitigate this issue. We're maybe a couple orders of magnitude off from fully practical, but we're pretty close. And that was the main insight of our hot cloud paper. And we do have some special purpose protocols for specific problems that are more efficient. And if I have a few minutes, I just wanted to give a quick idea of the ideas that underlie interactive proof protocols. Okay, so I'm going to actually give a protocol for a specific problem, computing the sample variance of a data stream. So all this is let x be the frequency vector of a stream. So that means that the ith entry of x is just the number of times that item I occurs in the stream. And our goal is just to compute the sum of the squared entries of x. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to describe a one message protocol for which the verifier uses sublinear space and sublinear communication between the prover and the verifier. So this is non-trivial to achieve and it's actually optimal. So this is what you do. Well, here's a first idea. It won't quite work out, but it conveys the general idea. So you have this frequency vector x. You know, again, the ith entry is the number of times item I occurs in the stream, and view it as a frequency square. So just map your vector into the square. And here's the first idea. You could have the prover send the answer in pieces. So the prover could send the sum of the squares of the entries in the first row, that's the number 20, the sum of the squares of the entries in the second row and in the third row. And now the question is, if the prover lies at all, how's the verifier going to catch her? So a first idea is to just have the verifier pick a random row and exactly track all of the frequencies of all of the items in that row. So the verifier might pick this yellow row and keep a counter for each of those three items. Now, if the prover lies about a row, the verifier might catch the prover. The verifier might get lucky and might have picked the row that the verifier lied about. But of course, there's a very small probability that the prover would be caught. So the idea is that what we would really like is that if the prover lies in even one place, the prover has to lie in almost all of the places. And so what we do is we use an error-corrected encoding of the input, and that basically ensures what I just said happens. If the prover lies in one place, the prover has to lie in almost all places. So now what happens is, rather than the input itself, we add this redundancy. You look at an error-corrected encoding of the input, and now the verifier picks a random row of the encoding. And now the prover sends the sum of the squares of the entries of all of the rows in the encoding, and by the error-correcting properties of the code, it turns out that if the prover lies about one row, the prover has to lie about almost all of the rows. And essentially we're done. The only other detail is that I have to note that these numbers on the right side that the prover sends are all lie on a low degree polynomial, so you don't have to actually send all the numbers. You can just send the polynomial, so the proof is short. Okay, so I might have lost some people at the end, but hopefully that conveys the high level idea that you use error corrected encodings and send polynomials around, and that's all I have to say.
Mike Walfish, UT Austin. So it looked like you were working over a finite field that had 61 bits.
Yep.
So for your matrix multiplication example, where you have 512 by 512 matrices, your inputs, like the entries of the matrix, have to be limited to 25 bits. Otherwise, you'd get overflow when you did the multiplication, right?
So that's correct. If that finite field was not big enough for you, there is another field with very similar properties that's actually like 128 bits long about that you could also use, but that's correct. Your answer has to, the numbers have to be at most 61 bits to work in that field.
Well, not just the answers, but your input. The point is that when you're multiplying your matrices, the inputs are limited to 25 bits, and I was wondering what would happen to your, right?
Not 25, 61.
No, your input, otherwise you're going to get overflow. Yeah, yeah. So you've got two matrices, and every entry in that matrix has 25 bits or fewer. Right. And my question is, do you have a sense for what would happen to your results if you relaxed that restriction, say by moving to multi-precision arithmetic or something like that?
So what I would suggest, if 128 bits about would suffice to contain the answers, then I would suggest moving to the next highest field with these properties, and you would take a performance hit. It would probably be about a factor of two, because you now have one extra word, rather than...
Wait, but you couldn't use native operations. I mean, maybe that we should take this offline, but you couldn't use native operations at that point, right?
That's correct. You would have to do, our implementation already has a sort of hand-rolled, efficient multiplication operation for the finite field that we used. And you could use another hand-rolled operation. You would not necessarily have to resort to, like, GMP or something to get arbitrarily high-precision arithmetic. Your overhead would be now every multiplication in the finite field would take maybe six machine multiplications rather than three like we do now. That would be the change.
Okay, so then all the speed ups would halve.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.